All right, this is the ins and outs of opening a bed and breakfast, a guest house, an Airbnb, a VRBO, any kind of short-term rental. I know people, they even say to me all the time, they go, oh, Kathy, do you have an Airbnb? Well, I have a short-term rental. And Airbnb is, for those that are newbies that are listening in, Airbnb is just another OTA, which is an online travel agency. It's a way to, you can market your short-term rental, but you don't have to just market it on Airbnb or even on VRBO, which is a vacation rental by owner. You can, depending on your zoning and where you are and whether you have to have some sort of I'll call it an occupancy from your city or your municipality. You can, at some point, you can actually advertise on all the OTAs, the online booking, the online travel agencies. You can advertise on booking.com and Expedia and Travelocity and all of those. And you can be as busy as you want to be, honestly, as busy as you want to be. Now, I personally, and I'll just share a little bit about me, and then I'm going to hand it over to Adam, and then we're going to ultimately get around to Alan. But I personally have a guest house in my home. So I am doing a little bit of a house hack for those of you that are in the real estate space. I have a house hack where I rent out 3 rooms in my home, and then I keep an owner's suite for myself. And we have managed it to the point where we can separate our owner's suite away from the guest rooms. And so my guest rooms look very much like a hotel room. Each room has 2 double beds. It has their own private bathroom, an in-suite bathroom in every single room. And they have their little coffee station and water and, you know, cups and all that good stuff and extra blankets in the closet and extra pillows and all that good stuff. So it's quite like staying at a hotel. I electronically check my guest in. As soon as I get the rooms flipped and they're ready to go again, I electronically check my guest in and they get an actual key code to the front door and they can arrive at their convenience no matter how late. So I'm not sitting around waiting for guests to arrive. Like, you know, if you're in any of those Airbnb groups, you see where people are like, well, my guest came in really late and I was just up waiting for them to arrive. And so I don't do that. And then, you know, they can check out on their own. I do not provide a full breakfast. I am actually described as a guest house, but I do put out a continental breakfast because I know that some folks have to hit the road early. They have to, you know, maybe catch a flight or whatever, and they're out really early and there's nothing open yet if they've got an early morning flight. So I will put out a continental, which is pastries and cookies and fruit and all these different flavored coffees and teas and all of these, you know, fufu creamers that I happen to like. And so I put all of that out in our parlor. We are an 1865 historic home. And so we have decorated our home and we advertise as the Caraway Guest House from the Roaring 20s. And so we're named after the book, The Great Gatsby, Nick Carraway, the narrator of the book, The Great Gatsby. And so everything is kind of decorated in that 1920s look to the point where we're in a residential neighborhood. And so we can't put out a big billboard that says we're a guest house. And so we have found a 1920s looking automobile that we are going to letter the door and we're going to park that in its own special driveway and put a spotlight on the door. And so at that point, that will become our sign and our parade car and all of those fun things. And I might even talk Mark into putting on his 1920s Gatsby suit. We're ballroom dancers and we can go to the dance in the 1920s Gatsby mobile. So so that's the plan. That's the plan. And so we've got Joseph. He says we just got our house painted for our first midterm rental. Yep, I understand that. I also have a midterm rental in Columbus, Ohio, and I am using that for traveling nurses at the moment. Well, traveling medical professional, I'm on Furnished Finders. And so I'm doing quite well with that. And then I just purchased, Mark and I together just purchased another short-term rental in the Hocking Hills area. And we decided to rent that long-term for the first year. So you guys will get this. So we can work the bugs out. This is one of those, it's out in the country. We were just having a conversation before I started recording about a property, whether it was in the city limits or whether it had a well and septic. And this is out in the country, but it did not have a well. It had an underground water tank, a cistern type tank. And so we decided we wanted to drill a well and get all of that connected. And so we're just going to rent it long-term for the first year while we get all that stuff done. And then we'll convert it over to a short-term rental right in the center of Hocking Hills District once that long-term renter moves on. So that's where I'm at so far. And so I'm going to turn it over to Adam. Adam, tell us a little bit about you and what you do, and then we'll move on to Alan.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a mortgage broker with LFG Lending. I specialize in loans specifically for investors, real estate investors. So some of the more exotic loans that we do are things like hard money for fix and flip and rehab, DSCR loans, which is an acronym that stands for debt service coverage ratio loans. That's where we take the income and the expenses of the property, and we use that to qualify for the loan rather than your personal income. It's great for investors, especially investors that have unusual income, where they're flipping houses, or maybe they're realtors, or maybe they don't have 2 years of commission only income. So it's great for that. And then we do full commercial loans. So if you do look good on paper, if you've got great tax returns and great income, that's an excellent option. It's going to give you all kinds of different interesting things. Things like you can buy with a long-term loan that has a rehab component. So speaking of short-term rentals, I just did one of these for a good friend of mine. They bought in the Hocking Hills area. They bought a cabin. They did some rehab. And it's going to double the value. I'm very excited for them. And they're really jazzed about that. Personally, I house hack a duplex in the Clintonville area. I long-term rent the other side. And then we live in the owner side. And then that we bought at a great time in like 2013, accumulated a lot of equity. And we were able to use that equity as a down payment on another property that we turned into a short-term rental. And then I use a management company for that. And they're awesome, Housepitality. You can check them out at housepitality.io. But that's the little bit about me. And I'll put my contact information in the chat later on.
Okay. When you do put your contact in there, make sure that you click the everyone button so that it shows instead of just to the host and panelists. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference too between myself and Adam is I do my own flips, not only on my short-term rental because it is in my home. So it's kind of easy for me. I can throw a load of laundry in, and I'm also a writer. I also have an online international academy, and that's where I upload all of these replays as well. I run a podcast and I've got videos. And so I've got my fingers in a lot of things that I am creating. And so it's nice that I can just throw some laundry in and then I can go, be creative for a couple of hours and just switch laundry as I go. And it works out really well for me. Now, Adam, of course, does not live in his short-term rental. He's in a whole different house, and he's full-time in the mortgage lending industry. And so he uses a management company that basically they do it all. They can decorate the house. They manage the house. They advertise the house. They flip the house in between guests. They take care of repairs on the house. They take care of anything that got broken or stolen or damaged during a stay. And Adam just gets a check at the end of the month. So, mm-hmm. And then there's a million and one hybrids in between there as to how you want to manage your property. So just know there's all kinds of options out there. And so if you want to connect with me, to learn more, I can walk you through a lot of the scenarios if you have questions, and I'll put me in there, kathybinner.com. And so just connect with me if you have any questions, and I'd be happy to have a one-on-one conversation with you and help you get started on whatever it is that you're wanting to do. And so welcome. We've got some more folks joining in. So thank you for being with us. And so anyway, I want to talk, we've got some folks that's tapping in here. Josh says, my goal is to start a short-term property management company, very similar to what Adam was describing.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yes. I love that. I love that. And Adam put his contact info in there if you're needing any type of lending. I do want to ask a question, Adam. Folks know that you're in Central Ohio. How far can you cast your net to help these folks with lending? Can you nationally. Go into other states nationally?
Oh. There are some limits. There are a couple states like Arizona or North Dakota or Vermont where you can't broker commercial loans out there unless you live in the state. And I don't want to live in any of those states. So, So other than those, I mean, pretty much most states, I would say so. And if I can't do it, I can usually find somebody that can. So feel free to get in touch with me and I'll be happy to connect you. If I have a connection in your area, if I, for some reason, can't do it.
All right. So check out the chat. Adam put his connection information in there as well. And we'll let Alan put his in there before we're all finished. But I have a girlfriend named Andora, and that'll make Alan smile because Andora is a special kind of friend. I've known her for some time. And, we try to get together at least once a month. We don't always make it because she kind of wears all the hats with everything she's doing. And she's got several rentals and she's been in the middle of rehabbing. But when I asked her about being on our show this evening, she said, I've got the person for you. She goes, if you need me as a backup, she said, I'll be your backup. But she said, I've got the person you need to talk to. His name is Alan. She said, he's got a wonderful story. So she connected me and Alan together. And so Alan shared a little bit of his unique story with me when I first contacted Alan to see if he was interested in being on with us this evening. And he graciously said yes. So thank you for being here. And please share with our listeners how you bought your first short-term rental. This is a wonderful story and I love it.
Well, thanks for having me on, Kathy. So I have used Airbnb myself for quite a while. I did a lot of traveling for work. So I was an engineer and I worked for a company in a couple of different places in Maryland, and I thought I was going to be moving there. And so I would stay in an Airbnb in different neighborhoods, trying to figure out the traffic patterns and what neighborhoods I liked, where I could get to work in less than a half an hour type of thing. So I really got to know, the area that way. You got to meet people. And then I got a job in Central Ohio. And so instead of moving to Maryland, it looked like we were going to be moving to Ohio. So as summer was kind of winding down, we were trying to find a place to live and had our house for sale. And meanwhile, I would come up during the week for two or three days and work and then head back home and work from home for a day or so. So I was coming up to the Columbus area, trying different neighborhoods again, my same philosophy. And I found a house in Delaware, Ohio, which is a northern suburb of Columbus. And it's right near the Ohio Wesleyan University. And they had an Airbnb and they had just opened it up and I was their first guest. So I had experience at being a guest. And so they kind of liked that about me. They wanted to, get some feedback on, do you like this? Do you like that? Do you want to have coffee in the morning? That kind of thing. So they're a very friendly couple, and they actually, it was a bi-level house. So the upper part of the house, there were three bedrooms, and they were renting each bedroom out separately, a shared bathroom. So if you're the only one there, you got the bathroom to yourself. And they lived in the lower level where they had another bedroom, a living room area, their own bathroom, and a kitchen area. So they had a kitchen in the downstairs and a kitchen upstairs. So they had a separate door. So they come in the front door. When you got bi-level, you go upstairs to go to the guest rooms, you go downstairs to go to their suite. And they had a door right there that, that would lock and separate their house from everybody else. So I was their first guest. I went about doing my engineering career for two or three years and I started getting into real estate. And so I joined the local real estate club here in the Columbus area. And it turns out that it was also being run by the daughter of someone I had taken real estate classes from in Cincinnati when I went to school there. So long story short there, we already had some mutual acquaintances. She even remembered my name because when she was young enough to do the certificates for taking the class, she remembered having to spell my name in the calligraphy to get my certificate. Because her dad put her to work, obviously. Okay. So I got involved in real estate here and started you know, doing some investing, and I started out actually doing private lending. So I am a private lender. I do hard money loans. I have loaned long-term. I use my IRA funds in some cases to do that. In some cases, I use personal funds. But the very first loan I did was actually on somebody that was buying a Airbnb, a short-term rental at Myrtle Beach. Cool. So as I was doing that, and that came about, and I made that loan, and that's still in place today. I still get monthly payments on that. And I became a partner with that person. Meanwhile, this house that I had stayed at in the first place, they decided that they were going to be to move out of town. They had family here and they had family in New York, and they'd been spending the last 4 or 5 years here with that family. They decided, hey, we need to go spend some time with our other family. So they were going to put their house up for sale. And unfortunately, I didn't get to them before they put it on the real estate market. And so they had 4 or 5 bids on it already. And I called them up and I said, hey, what are you doing selling my bedroom? I said, I want to buy it.
I love that. Don't sell my bedroom.
Yeah. I said, you can't sell my bedroom. And, you know, because, you know, I had a room that I was usually in. Every once in a while, I take the bigger room, but I usually save that for guests that, you know, were, you know, a couple that was there, and I would take the smaller room because I was just, you know, I'm just there during the week. I worked all week. I just need a place to stay. But anyway, yeah, really nice place. They got a fire pit out back, and, you know, they would entertain us. We went to the zoo together one time, you know, when I was staying with them. So yeah, they decided, we're going to think about it. We're going to pray about it. And, you know, we'll get back to you. And, you know, sure enough, they wanted to sell me the house. So we ended up getting the house, even though there were, you know, 3 or 4 other offers on the property. Market was crazy. This was only less than a year ago, I guess this was. So we took it over. We got a conventional loan, put our 20% down. And, you know, she was happy, and she's actually been a guest since she's left and come back to stay with us. So it's nice when she comes here to have family to visit. You know, she's got a place to stay. And so we're still renting it the way she did, room by room, except now we also have the lower level, which we turned into an additional bedroom suite. And we will rent that one separately. So you can have your own private suite with your own private bathroom down there. Or you can rent one of the bedrooms upstairs. We've had times like the Ilwu University's Parents Weekend, every room was full. So we had parents staying there or other people staying there. We'd order pizza. We sat on the back deck. We'll make a fire out in the back. And so, she started out kind of like they did, because they lived there. They would let guests in. The neighbor actually is a helper in this. So she actually will let guests in from time to time if we can't make it. But that got to be, you know, a bit of a drag, especially when people wanted to come in late. And my wife's a softie. She couldn't say no to people that wanted to come at 10 and then didn't show up till midnight. You know, so she's running between our house and that one, which they're about 10 minutes apart, 4 or 5 miles from each other. So it's not really close.
I was going to ask how close you live to that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's managing that property and she's enjoying it. But we did put one of those remote locks on, and it's the best thing ever. I went over there one day and I couldn't remember the code, and she sees me coming because we have a Ring outdoor camera too. She goes, here's the number. As I tried putting it in, it didn't work. She goes, let me open it for you.
I love that.
Opened it for me. I'm like, yeah, thank you very much.
Well, how was it when you realized that, you know, that this property was going to go on the market, or was on the market, and when you realized it was on the market, what was your thought process that you just said, hey, I think we want to buy that. I think we want to have a short-term rental. What was your thought process? Because obviously over a year ago, you didn't have a short-term rental. What made you decide you wanted to do that?
I think it was because I had gotten back into real estate investing. So I had done a little bit of that when I was in college, and then, you know, got this career, and you moved around a couple of times. And so you didn't have time to plant roots where you felt like you'd be there long enough to buy a house that you wouldn't have to sell in 5 years when you moved. So I just didn't really do it. I was careful about the properties I bought for myself, you know, and tried to buy in a nice, you know, appreciating area, and did okay on that. But we didn't have any rentals till we got back to here. And then we started getting more involved in, you know, in the real estate club. And once people knew, you know, what I was doing, they would come to me and bring deals. So now actually, I probably already had an Airbnb at the beach. So by the time that The first loan that I made, the first loan that I made at Myrtle Beach, the person came back to me and says, I'm buying another property. I would like to borrow some more money. And at that point in time, you know, my IRA money was working elsewhere and I was getting higher interest. And I said, well, I can do it, but it's going to have to be at a higher interest rate. And they, you know, she didn't like that a whole lot. And I said, well, here's another option. Maybe we should be partners on this. I can provide the money. You can manage the property and we'll split the ownership. And she thought about that for a while and she said, okay, great. So we did it. So from that point, it turned into a partnership. So I own, you know, I don't know, 60% of that one or 40% of that one. And then since then, there were two other properties that came her way because she had realtors down there that knew what she was doing. These are all oceanfront condos and they're all in the same building. So now we know the organization, we know the condo association, the fees with it. And so it was a no-brainer. We added two more. So we went in and renovated those. The first one was a two-bedroom and the second two were just efficiency suites. And they didn't have a kitchen at that time. So we upgraded them and added a kitchen, like a mini kitchen. So we put a two burner stove in and a full size refrigerator freezer, you know, a sink. So they could actually have a place to do some cooking while they're there vacationing at the beach. And it's in a property that does have a water park. There's other water parks nearby that are better. But, you know, if you want to just stay right there, you can. And it's right on the ocean. They're all upper floors, like 8, 9, 10 floor. So you got a great view looking out at the beach.
Wow. So you have just the one in Delaware, but then you have three in Florida.
In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Myrtle Beach. Yep. South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. Okay. Joseph wants to know, what brand of lock did you use when you decided to put the digital lock?
I'll have to get back to you on that. There is one specific one. Let me think. I'll think about it. It's a Schlage lock, and they were hard to get. Mm-hmm. We had to order. We looked around. I mean, we finally thought we found one at Home Depot because it said it was in stock, and we went there, and they didn't really have it on the shelf, even though their inventory said. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to get. Yeah, it was $350 or something. It hooks up to Wi-Fi, but, you know, once it's in, it's great. And then we use the Ring security system, and we just have that outside. We have one at the front door and one around back at the on the deck looking out at the backyard.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Joseph, just so you know, they're called smart locks. You can research that. There are several different brands, and everybody has their preference on why they like a particular brand. So they're called smart locks, and it's the ones that you can actually program. And like Alan said, where his wife said, here, let me let you in. So you can actually, you know, if somebody's struggling to get through, because I have some older clientele that's not used to having these types of locks, and they're like, we don't know how to get through the door. And so that way you can very easily let them in and you don't have to physically drive over to do that. Josh says, that's an awesome story, Alan. I love that. Joseph says, thanks about the lock information. Now, how did you know that these properties were going to be perfect for you? Or did you just decide you had been in real estate long enough? And I tell this to my students all the time. And for those of you that are in the audience, and for those of you that have real estate, if you love real estate the way I love real estate, and the way a lot of folks that are in the real estate industry love real estate, you get a feel for it after a while, and you know when something is a good deal because you've looked at so many deals and you kind of have your thumb on the pulse of what the market values are, that when something crosses your desk that's a good deal, you kind of know it. You kind of say, what's wrong with this property? Why is it not sold yet? And that's when you go, maybe I better take a closer look. How did you know these were going to be the perfect properties for you, Alan?
At first, I didn't. I had to analyze them, and I had to ask a lot of questions. You know, my concerns were, you know, it's in a condo, so when they have a, you know, if they have an assessment, it could be a big deal. So you need to understand the building. How old is it? You know, we just had a elevator replaced in the section that we're in. So there's like, I don't know, like the stacks or whatever. So we're in, there's like three different stacks. And so there's three different sets of elevators. They're all, you can use all three of them, but you know, one is closer to your unit than the other. It's in your stack and it needed to be replaced. And so we got an assessment for about $3,000. Everybody in the whole building in that section had to pay for part of that. So, you know, those are the kind of things you have to realize are going to happen. So, you know, you just, it takes a lot of research. I'm an engineer. I'm going to look at, you know, what are the profits and, you know, potential income? What's the break even point? And I was looking for a 10% return. You know, if I wasn't going to make 10%, I wasn't going to invest in it. And I wasn't going to count on appreciation because I've seen what condos do. Sometimes they go up and sometimes they come right back down, and you can't say that it's going to be worth more 5 years from now, than, you know, because a new building can go up, you know, a couple blocks down, and now they're the new one and yours is now worth less. So, I wasn't counting on that. They have actually gone up in value. They have about doubled. So the market is good right now. I actually put them up for sale just, you know, kind of as, to people who in my club that were interested in them. And I got offers on two of them. One, somebody wanted to trade me for 40 acres of undeveloped land right on Lake Norris in Tennessee. And I was interested in doing that. These are already, you know, subdivided lots, but I thought that would be an interesting thing for me to do. I like that lake and it's in Tennessee. I wanted to go there. And then somebody else just offered me some cash to buy half of one of them. So they just wanted a place to park some cash and get half of the returns. And since I was looking to pull money out and reinvest it somewhere else, that was going to be a good way for me to do it. So also included in that deal, they were going to trade an additional piece of property that was in Circleville, Ohio, that wasn't, you know, a really high dollar value property. And I was happy to do that deal. We're going to do it. But there was also an option on that smaller property that the current owner was able to exercise to sell it to somebody else. So until that option expired, it really wasn't available at the price I wanted to get it for, because he had an option that was higher. So we ended up not doing that deal because he took that option. But they're still out there, and you know, I would still sell them and I would still buy another one. So it just,
Well, and for our audience, what I want to also bring up is my midterm rental, which midterm, and just to give everybody an overview, if you're brand new to the space and you're not positive what all of this lingo means, when you have a long-term rental, somebody is going to rent it for a year or more. When you have a midterm rental, someone is going to rent it for more than 30 days, but usually less than a year. It could be corporate housing, could be a traveling medical professional. We call it traveling nurses, but it could be anybody in the medical profession. They're oftentimes looking for 13-week assignments, and they need a place to stay for that 13 weeks. And sometimes their assignments get renewed, so they want to renew their 13 weeks for another 13, which is perfect, because then I don't have to go flip the house in between. And so I end up on my midterm maybe flipping that house two times the entire year, whereas on a short term, you might be flipping it, you know, every weekend or every other night, depending on what your minimum night stay is. And so the thing is when you get into the condo associations, the number one thing, or the first thing that you have to check out, is the HOA, because oftentimes the HOA will have some rules in addition to the zoning rules. And so you have to check that out. But even if they say it's okay to have, you know, a midterm rental in here, you know, as long as it's for 30 days or more, or you can do short term or you can do long term, just know that in an HOA, that can change with the stroke of an ink pen. The HOA board can decide to change the rules. Now, you could be considered grandfathered in. And again, that's one of the things that you want to explore, is if I do buy in an HOA, you know, am I grandfathered in? If the rules say that I can do this now, and if they change the rules later, does that mean me, or am I grandfathered in? Now, sometimes you're grandfathered in, and sometimes you're only grandfathered in until that person moves out. Let's say you had a condo that you've rented long-term rental, and Susie's lived there for 3 years, but now Susie decides to buy a house, and Susie moves out of that HOA, out of that environment. And all of a sudden, maybe the new rule says if your unit becomes vacant, you can no longer use it as a rental. So there are all those things to keep in mind. Just know that that's an option to, you know, that you have to explore that. Joseph says, can you buy an HOA? The HOA is usually a group of folks that are volunteers. There might be a couple of paid positions within the HOA, and they simply run the organization that manages that complex. So you can't generally go in and buy an HOA.
I do have a comment about that though.
Okay.
So if you're part of a smaller condo association, we're running into an issue with a deal that we're working on up at Lake Erie, and there's like 6 condos that are in there. If you were to buy up all 6 condos, then you control all the properties and you then at that point control the HOA and you can do whatever you want, because the HOA is made up of member owners of the right. community.
And you would then be the 100% owner if you bought all 6 of the units in the 6 unit condo. So, yeah. So there is
typically,
that.
Typically you just have to own the lion's share of them, right? Because you get a vote per unit. So if you own 4 of those 6, you would always win the vote.
Yeah.
Well, this is true as well. So yes, good points. Good points. But just know that there is that extra layer that you do have to explore if you're going to be purchasing in a condo complex or into a housing development that has an HOA in place. So just know that there is that extra layer to explore. But again, even then, even if you owned all the units or if you had the majority of the units, you still have to abide by whatever that municipality's zoning rules are. So you have the zoning issues as well. And there are some cities, some municipalities, some villages, they have written out any kind of short-term or midterm rentals. They do not want that in their neighborhoods. And they have already written that into their zoning code for their municipality, their city. So start with the state. Like in Ohio, you would start with the Ohio Revised Code and then go, and then you just start coming, basically make it smaller and smaller. You start with the state. And then you go with the county, and then you got to go with the city, and then you got to go, you know, with whatever municipality is that controls where that particular unit sits. And so just be sure that you do your homework. So I just want to toss that out there. If anyone is looking at a particular property and you need some help with that, KathyBenner.com. I put it in the chat earlier. Contact me and I can help you walk through that. Now, Albert wants to know, is there a website that we can find information of where the short-term rentals are allowed? And finding that is hard to find information at times. I get it. Yes, it is hard. Again, you have to do some digging. Again, start with your state's revised code and then narrow it down to the municipality that your property is actually in. And for me, here in Canal Winchester, Ohio, I was the first one that wanted to have a legal, I'll call it legal, bed and breakfast guest house inside the city limits, because there were some Airbnbs and those folks did not bother to get any type of permission or certificate or whatever. And so I wanted to do all the right steps the right way. Because I didn't want to get a cease and desist letter at some point after I had, you know, 14 reservations on the books. So, so anyway, do it the right way. And that way you don't have to worry that you're trying to, you know, be undercover. And I've seen in some of the Facebook Airbnb sites where folks are in there saying, I told my guests not to talk to the neighbors because they're not supposed to be Airbnb-ing their condo. And the folks did and told the neighbors, and the neighbors reported them. And then the HOA sent them a cease and desist, and, you know, and it's a mess. So just, you know, put all your cards on the table. Anyway, another comment. This is also from Albert. I have a property in Chicago. It looks like it's nearly impossible. Some cities are really against any type of short-term rental. So again, give me a call. We can have some conversations. I got a few little hacks on how you can get around some of that. So back to you, Alan. Did you have to figure out, not just the HOA, but did you have to figure out any of these zoning issues for any of your properties, or was that kind of already done by the time you came on board with them as a short-term rental?
So I do pay attention to what those zoning, you know, rules are. And actually the one in Delaware, the closing agent was the mayor of Delaware. So she knew exactly what I was going to be doing for it. She also runs a title company there.
Okay.
And that made another connection by working on that deal. So that was kind of interesting.
Yes. And I, for those of you that know me, I came out of the beauty salon industry and the mayor's wife was one of my clients. So I couldn't like fly under the radar because she knew me personally. So yeah, it's kind of nice to have those connections. But again, do it the right way and, you know, do your homework. So, Alan, how do you get your bookings? Are you on OTAs, online travel agencies? And do you have a channel manager software? Let's chat about that.
Oh, so see, now that's where I have brains on my team.
Okay. So
the ones at Myrtle Beach, as you know, I started out with a partner there who was already investing there. And she has been growing her business there. And I'm going to put the website in the chat here, but it's stayinmyrtlebeach.com. And okay. That is where the properties are listed. So she lists them directly on there, but they're also available on Airbnb and VRBO. I think we get about 80-20, you know, 80% from the websites and 20% off of her website. And obviously that'll grow over time, I would think. Because we get repeat business coming back, and then they want to book there and save those fees.
Now I'm going to jump in and ask again. It's called stayonthebeach.com.
It's called stayinmyrtlebeach.com. Yep.
Stayinmyrtlebeach.com.
Right. Yep. So, oh, I didn't do everybody. Let me redo that.
Yep. Yep. That way everybody can see that and we can check it out.
Yep. And I'll put the link for the one I have in Delaware as well. And so for that one, it's just strictly right now on VRBO. We've talked about doing like furnished finders. And actually we just recently, like as of yesterday, I think, are switching it over to to renting the whole house. So we're going to rent just all four rooms are going to rent together. And we're going to see if that rents any differently, especially this time of year. We're going to have families coming in for Christmas and Thanksgiving, as opposed to making them find all the rooms individually, and then maybe one of them's booked. So we had that trouble before. We had some people that were staying longer term, repeat renters that were there in a room. And so we really couldn't block out the whole house because somebody was already in part of it. So now we're going to try it that way and see how that works.
And again, that's another great point. Once you get into any type of business, you have to test and measure. Make sure that you look at those numbers. I don't know about you guys, but when I was in corporate America, I hated all those reports. You had to do these reports. And I'm thinking, oh, that's just a lot of work. But they're so important because oftentimes you don't see the trends. You don't see where you're going. You don't see where you've been. You don't see what is really profitable until you look at some of those reports. So be sure and test and measure and make sure that, you know, if you need to, you know, adjust or segue in any way, that you can do that. And take a look at the chat. Alan put everything in there. He's a private lender, investor, condos for vacations at the beach, stayinmyrtlebeach.com, Whispering Pines, Ocean Pearl, Barefoot Bungalow, and then he's also in Delaware, Ohio. So be sure and connect and take a look at what he's doing there. So back to my question, do you have a channel manager where you can keep tabs on these different channels that are coming in?
So my partner does that, you know, basically, and she uses dynamic pricing as well.
Okay.
So, you know, it goes out to the, you know, the different, to AirDNA and other services mm-hmm. like that, that will, you know, provide what's available in the area at a certain time. So, you know, obviously during the high seasons in the summer, when people are going to the beach, you have higher rates than you do like right now. And so we typically try to offer monthly rates this time of year to people that are going to head down to the beach and maybe spend a month or two down there where it's a little bit warmer than it is in Ohio.
Snowbirds.
Yep. And that works out. We had people who did monthly rentals in two or three of the units last year.
Yes. And this year is going to be a great year for those that have some short-term rentals, because that whole area that was hit by the hurricane, a lot of those folks already are booked to be there during that time. And the places where they normally stayed as a snowbird have been damaged or are gone. And so now they're scurrying around looking, and prices, again, supply and demand, prices are going up on what's still available. So if you're sitting in a position where you've got one of those short-term rentals, you can actually turn a nice little profit coming into what we call snowbird season. And so, yes, it is. It's very important to keep an eye on what's happening in the marketplace. So we have a question. Josh says, Alan, where did you find your Myrtle Beach partner? I'm trying to do what she is doing, but I was going to start in Philadelphia or Outer Banks managing the short-term rentals, the STRs. Josh is wanting to actually be the management company. So how did you find your Myrtle Beach partner?
Well, I mean, it's really just had to do with the local real estate club that I belong to. So I belong to CORE, which started out as the Central Ohio Real Estate Entrepreneur Association. And when COVID hit, we all went online and they did a great job with Zoom. And all the other real estate clubs that couldn't meet in person were coming to us. And so we have people that are in our club now from DC, from Florida, from Pittsburgh, from Philadelphia, from Virginia, from Florida, and they're all part of our club. Now, they may belong to other clubs as well, but they have joined our club. So there's over 900 people in our club, and they have meetings, different topics, and we have a focus group just on short-term rentals. So there's two experts on there that talk about short-term rentals. One is from Cincinnati and one is from Columbus. And they'll talk about what lock do you use? You know, do you need to have alarm systems? What about parties? You know, just all those things that can go wrong. How do you deal with them and that sort of thing? So anyway, that's where I found her because she got on this call and was looking for somebody to make a loan. And I connected and I said, yes, I've got this self-directed IRA money that, you know, was sitting there in the stock market and you know what that's like, right?
Yes.
So I was very anxious to pull it out of there and not have too much of it exposed. My goal was to move half of it out so that I didn't have it that great exposure. And I'm glad that I did because, you know, I got, you know, 60 or more percent of it out of there before this latest downturn. And it's invested in something that is solid and growing. And it's making a good return. So that's where I found her. And again, you know, it's one of these things you have to decide. You have to evaluate the person. You have to evaluate the deal. You know, am I willing to lend somebody money? And then I went to my attorney and we wrote up the documents. And I also found him in the club. You know, I went to one of the people in my club and said, hey, I'm going to need a real estate attorney to write up some of these documents. Who should I go to? Oh, well, you know, you got this guy right here in the club. So go talk to him. He knows he's an investor and he knows real estate and he's a lawyer. So, yeah.
Perfect.
Networking, right. Absolutely.
Yes. Networking is huge. Absolutely. Adam put a link in the chat for everyone. And Josh says, awesome, Alan. He said, I will join a club to network. And he says, I would use a noise monitor to try to stop parties. That would at least give you an alert. We see a lot of folks that are doing that. I do have another question for Alan. Describe how your check-in looks to your guest.
Okay. So that varied because we used to do it personally. And so we physically had the front door locked and any guest that was coming, even if there was somebody already staying there, we would meet them at the house or the neighbor would do it if we couldn't do it. So we would plan ahead when somebody was going to be there. And we had certain times, just like you're going to, you know, advertise, this is the time you can check in after 4 o'clock, before 8 o'clock. So we know when the window is, you know, and try to plan around our own schedules. But usually it was my wife that would go there. Sometimes it would be me if she couldn't do it. And if neither one of us could do it, the neighbor would do it. And so we would let them in. We'd show them their room. We kind of, you know, just talk to them, where they're from. How was your trip? You know, what are you doing while you're here? You need anything? Can we recommend restaurants? That type of thing. We'd point out, you know, we'd have snacks out. We didn't do breakfast per se, but we would make sure that they had, candy bars and oatmeal bars and pancake batter or waffle batter. And they knew where the toaster was. And, you know, there were a few breakfast type items around that they could use if they wanted to eat something. And sometimes we'd have drinks, whether it's water or juice in the refrigerator, that type of thing. So, yeah, they would be welcome. They'd be shown their room. And then we have lanyards with keychains on them. So, you know, you can't lose it. A big lanyard, you can wear it around your neck. Different colors for each room. So it matches the decor in the room. So one's called Bonnie Blue, so it's blue, obviously. Another one's called Barn Door, so it's kind of a green. And then there's another one that's called Americana, so it's red, white, and blue. So that goes along with it. So you got a key on that ring then to the front door and to your own bedroom, because since they're rented, the bedrooms are rented individually, they actually have locks on the bedrooms.
Yes. And ours does too, because we rent rooms out of our home, three separate rooms, and we can have three separate guests that do not know each other renting on the same night. And so we are using the keyless entries, and so they get their own personal codes. And that way they can get through the front door and through their room door into their room. Alan put in the chat about his Airbnb in the Columbus suburbs. And so, yeah, there's a link there for folks. So there is that. So tell us about the morning breakfast. You say you don't provide a breakfast per se. How about the condos at Myrtle Beach? Do those have any breakfast foods, or what does that look like for your guests?
Yeah, they do not. They all have coffee makers, and we supply coffee. Okay. There's Keurig machines in every one, and different flavors of coffee, different flavors of tea, maybe hot chocolate. So that's available. The ones at the beach, we really don't go beyond that because they have kitchens. We're expecting people are going to buy groceries and cook their own food. But the one, like I said, in Delaware, where it's, you know, it's kind of a courtesy snack type thing that we provide.
Okay. Okay.
And now that we have that, the keyless lock, our check-in is a little different. We will check in with them once they've checked in. And because we have that lock, we know when they arrive.
Yes.
And we know if the door is locked or open, and each person has a different code. So we know which person has come in.
I love that. I love that. It helps you manage from a distance. Yes, Adam.
Alan, you this place in Delaware looks awesome, by the way. I got to ask, I see you've got, it looks like solar panels on the roof. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it came with those solar panels.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you notice, I mean, compared to your other properties, does it mitigate the energy cost quite a bit, or?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at another property right now that I'm buying in Columbus. It's probably going to be a lease option. It's near German Village, and it has solar panels on it, and its monthly electric is down to $77 a month for an older 100-year-old. Wow. Three bedroom, bath and a half, two story with an attic house.
Yeah.
1,270 square feet. So that's what the electric bill has been there for that family of four that lived there. And two more girls. So they use plenty of hot water and electric and all that stuff.
I love it.
Now the house in Delaware, we keep asking for a bill. I think we've gotten one bill. So we're making more energy right now this summer with all the season than we're actually using.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love it.
Now, yes, that is very cool.
There was a really point of contention with both of these. The people my friends that owned that house had those put on, and they owed a lot of money on those. So they thought they were going to get a certain payoff when that house closed. And some of it had to go to pay off the loan on those solar panels. So they are not free. It's not free energy.
Yeah.
And the house that I'm getting in German Village, near German Village, that also has them on, he's got, you know, a home equity loan and this solar loan on his property. And he was trying to get more for the house because of the solar panels. He goes, nobody wants to pay more for them. I'm like, yeah, right. I don't want to pay 20 grand so I can have a $77 a month bill, because that's not 77 a month. That's right. 20 grand and then 77 a month. So there's a cost benefit analysis there. So unless you get a huge subsidy from the government for doing it, it really doesn't pay.
And you got to be careful. I will mention,
if there's a power outage, it's another 20 grand for the backup battery. So you still don't have power even though you have solar panels. Because you're just feeding the grid. You're not supplying power to yourself.
Yeah.
Josh says they're very expensive to buy and install, and you also need to pay to dispose of them if you no longer want them.
Good luck with that one. Yeah.
I get that. So let me ask you this, Alan. Where do you go to get your linen and those types of supplies? Do you have a go-to place? And now, of course, what you're doing here in Central Ohio is probably different than what you're doing at Myrtle Beach. But let's talk about the Myrtle Beach, where you've got three units in one building. Do you kind of decorate everything the same? So if something gets damaged and you've got one empty unit, you can scoot it over to the other unit. Is it something like that where it's easier to manage, or does your gal down there take care of all that?
Well, Yes and no. So yes, she does take care of that, and they are themed similarly. So, you know, if you would go and look at that website, so that website has my three properties, but there's 15 or 18 properties on there. And some of those she owns, some of those she's managing for other people. And then there's, you know, another one she's managing for me. So she has a crew down there and they do take care of the cleaning. And oh, one of the tips that I wanted to give you guys, go if, you know, if you start into this business or before you start, become a guest, you know, find out what it's like I did. That was the thing I did first. I mean, it's kind of weird. You know, people at work would say, you're staying where? I'm staying at the Holiday Inn. You know, why are you staying there? You know, and then I went to like the extended stay hotel. And you got families in there cooking, who knows what, stinking up the hallways. And you're like, oh gosh, get me out of here, you know, because the whole place is like that. You know, you got little kids running around. And so it's not a hotel and it's not a house. It's a zoo. So, you know, go try an Airbnb, you know, meet people. I met a lot of neat people doing that. But then once you have one, go stay in it. So I stayed in the ones at Myrtle Beach. I was, you know, right after we got done decorating it. So, you know, we did extensive rehabs on these, put $15,000, $20,000 into them, you know, put new floors in, got all new furniture, did the walls, you know, decorating, appliances, all that kind of stuff. The counters, the ones that needed the new stove, or we put a new built-in counter and stove in. You know, that was about $5,000 just to do that, just to put the little two burner stove in. But because we had a wiring put over, and but it was worth it because people rent that, and they are rented, I don't know, 70% of the time. I mean, 80% of the time. So, I mean, it's much better than other people in that same building, and they like it because it's newer. But go stay in your property and you'll learn, you know, is there a place to hang my towel? Is there a place to hang my coat when I come in the door? Does the furnace make noise? Or, you know, the air conditioning make noise. If you have a parking lot, like, okay, the one that I was staying in, it's got two bedrooms. Well, one of the bedrooms was on the ocean. The other's on the inside where the parking lot is. Well, that's lit all night. So you got light coming in all night. You need room darkening shades. We didn't have them. I called up my partner. I says, we got to get some shades on here. People that want to be able to sleep need dark. So, you know, okay. I mean, those are just things that you don't know unless you go there. So I also volunteer my services for anybody that's got an exotic location. They got a brand new Airbnb and need somebody to test it out. I will go there for you.
I love it. I love it. We'll join you, Alan. We'll join you. We'll all just go there. Yeah.
Give you a good critique. You know, I'll give the place the once over.
Yeah. Josh wants to know, does your gal down there in Myrtle Beach, does she actually live close, or does she have a team there and she manages it remotely?
She manages it remotely. She's in the Cincinnati club.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So she simply has a team on the ground there.
Okay. Right. And it's her desire to retire there, to move there. So, you know, she'd been going there for vacations for many years and started this. And I think she bought the condo recently that she actually wants to retire into. A really nice 3-bedroom condo in a really kind of more exclusive building. So, yeah. And it's currently available for rent.
I love that. I love that. So there, of course, with her team on the ground, she has a cleaning team, whoever the cleaning company is, whether she's hiring. Now, right. The question is does she hire them? Do you know, because we've got, you know, some folks on the call that want to do some management. Does she hire them as employees, or is she hiring an independent contractor type cleaners?
No, I see the cleaning bills. I'd have to go look and see. I'm guessing that they're not her employees, that they're contracted.
Okay. And for those that are listening, there's pros and cons to that. If you hire them as an employee and they don't do the job the way you want it done, you can retrain them, you can fire them, you can hire other ones. You know, you have total control over who is in your units and doing your cleaning. Again, if they're independent contractors, then you don't have to worry about, you know, payroll and workers' comp and all of those things. But then under a contract, you still have the option, if they're not doing the job, that you can simply, you know, cancel the contract and hire a different cleaning company. So there's pros and cons both ways. I just didn't know which way. Now, how about in Delaware? Are you guys, you say your wife is managing that one. Is she doing the cleaning and the flipping in between?
Yep, she's doing all the cleaning and flipping right now.
Okay.
And, you know, she'll manage that based on her schedule as well. So if she knows we're going to be tied up, she'll just block the rooms, you know, yes, to give her time to clean it, to make sure nobody's coming in right afterwards.
And I do that too. Now I do have a channel manager. I'm using a channel manager called CloudBeds, and because I have three different rooms. And so what I do is I've connected all of my channels. So I've connected the booking.com. I've connected the Expedia, the Travelocity, and Airbnb. I've connected all of those into my channel manager. And so then, whenever somebody books on booking.com, it comes into my channel manager, and the channel manager pushes it backwards out to all those other channels, yeah, so that I don't get a double booking. Yep. But then the other advantage for me is if I do want to block the room off, well, let's say Mark and I want to be out of town and I don't want to worry about guests coming and going, or I didn't get a chance to get a room flipped yet for whatever reason, because maybe I've got a speaking gig somewhere and I don't want to have to run back and flip a room. I can actually sit down on my phone, even on my channel manager, and I can block the room and it automatically pushes it backwards out to all my channels. And for the customer, for the guest, it simply looks like I'm already booked. But only on my end, I can tell whether it's a booking or whether I've blocked the room. And CloudBeds is the one that I'm using. It's $124 a month for me, and because I have three rooms connected to it. And with CloudBeds, with that model, I not only get a front office program where I can go in and block, and you know, I can scoot a guest from one room to another if they say, hey, do you have a downstairs room? Yeah, let me scoot you down there. And so I've got my front office system is connected, the channel manager that manages all the different channels is connected, and I get a free website. And anybody that books directly with my free website, then I don't have to pay any commissions that you normally would pay out to those OTAs, those online travel agencies like Airbnb and Travelocity and Booking.com. So there are several programs out there. Little Hotelier comes to mind. That's a big one. There was one, I think, called Guesty, and I'm using CloudBeds. So, but there's more than those three. So just to give you some idea that those things are available. So how do you handle problem guests, Alan? How do you handle that? If you have you had any major problems?
Fortunately, no. We did have one person that brought in an unregistered guest, and we were able to see that because of our Ring camera. And so we sent them a note and asked them to have that person leave, because we do not allow unregistered guests. We do require everybody to be registered. I'm not sure if we were charging extra for a guest at that time. We might, I know we are now. We probably charge $10 extra per head or something like that right now. But yeah, we haven't really had one. We had one of our guests that was staying there long term. We were, you know, giving a break to, it was not through Airbnb. And when it got to be the point where it was really interfering with us running the business, we just raised her rate and she left.
Yeah. So that's an easy way to handle some of that. I haven't really had any major issues. You know, I had one guy that decided, he was a young guy, and he decided he was going to smoke, and I had to, you know, inside the house. And so I had to, you know, knock on his door and remind him that we have a smoking area outside and that there was no smoking inside the house. And that's kind of solved it. We haven't had any issue with noise and or parties or anything like that. So so again, life has been pretty good. I've been doing this since October of 2016, and I haven't had any real issues. Now, when I get onto those Facebook Airbnb groups and you read down through some of the issues that people are having, I'm like, wow. And it makes you think, oh, maybe I'm not going to do this. But I'm here to tell you, that's not been my experience. I've had a good experience with it. It's definitely cash flows for me. So, and it sounds like Alan's had a good experience. I know Adam's had a good experience. So any questions from the audience? We still have Alberto, Joseph, Josh, Stephanie, Tom, still on the call. Please put in the chat if you have any questions at all for any of the three of us. We'd be happy to answer any questions for you. Something that maybe we haven't covered.
Speaking of problems, we do screen our guests before they come in. They can't just direct book, so we do not have direct booking turned on. We were a super host to begin with because our previous owner was a super host and we basically took over her account. So that allowed us to keep all the reviews that were there. And she still kind of co-hosts with us now, which helped, you know, it's been helpful to transition and, mm-hmm. you know, and repeat guests and that sort of thing, you know, are coming back because they contact her and that sort of thing. We have had the issue with people trying to get us to reserve a room. It actually happened once. They want to, you know, they want to book a room and you say yes, and you reserve it for them. And you think, oh, I don't know if I really want to rent to these people. I don't have any reviews. And then they never book it. So they basically are blocking your room for that day. And then you lose a booking because nobody else can get it because you've got it blocked for them, thinking it's, you know, the system blocks it for them, waiting for their payments, and then they never make it. So they never book the room per se. They just ask to book and then don't do it. And I think that happened to us once because we actually told somebody no for a specific reason. And I think the following weekend, they actually did that to us, that they, you know, came in under another name and booked the room, you know, and then just didn't show and never paid. So we also had people from China inquiring, wanting to stay for a long time, and they call you landlady or something like that, and they got no reviews, and they're from the Communist Party something or other, and you know, I think it's a scam, and we have denied those people.
And some of those are hard to tell. So what I've done is I found that less is more. And I'll explain that. I just tell folks when they contact me directly via email or text message or whatever, I just refer them back to the booking site. And that way the booking site already is tried and tested. And I just refer them back to the booking site. If you want to book, here's the link. And so I don't take a lot of those requests or entertain those conversations. And if they want to involve you in huge conversation about, well, do you have this? And do you have this? And do you have that? And do you have this?
Right.
It's all on the booking site. So I just say, here's the link. It's got all the information you need. And so I just send them back to the booking site, and that usually can weed them out.
Yep.
Albert says, currently doing long-term rentals and looking to start short-term rentals, trying to learn. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate you being on. If you have any questions, again, get in touch with any of the three of us. And so I put it in the chat. You're welcome to scroll back through the chat, take a screen print, jot it down, whatever. I'm also going to do a recording of this particular call. And it will be at kathybenner.com. You just scroll down kathybenner.com until you come to the ins and outs of opening a B&B. And once you get there, you can click through and you can listen to all of our replays of all of our calls. And what I will do is I'll put our contact information in the description of the replay. So if you didn't get a chance to jot it down or make a screen print, you can simply go to kathybenner.com and go to the replay, and everything will be there. Not only the replay of this recording, but it'll also have our contact information under the description. So you can reach us that way. So Alan, any last words that you would like? Josh says, okay. Josh put out a phone number for the guy who wants to change to a short-term rental if he's interested in management. So yeah, Josh is advertising already. He's so I'm awesome. I'm going to cut and paste and put that out to everyone. And so there is that information was from Josh. When you see that 717 number, that is from Josh for the guy who wants to change to short-term.
I love it.
But yes, yes.
And Josh, I mean, the best advice that I have is get to every single networking event that you possibly can, because the more people you can interact with, the more likely you are going to find clients and everything. I mean, yeah. It's amazing. It's the best.
Yeah. And he says, that's why he's here. Josh, where did you say you were from? Put in the chat.
I think
again.
You said it was in Philly or something.
I think so.
We've got lots of networking, Philadelphia. We've got lots of networking here in the Columbus, Ohio area. So look up in your area, you know, connect with, find some Facebook groups. And here's kind of the little sideways hack, if you will. If you find some real estate Facebook groups, go check out the admin and go look at their personal profile. Oftentimes, those admins have networking groups, and that's why they have a Facebook group, is that's kind of the top of their funnel, getting people interested in content. And so check out the admins of some of those groups that you're in, and you might discover that there's some actual in-person networking groups connected to those Facebook groups. And then also check on meetup.com. Meetup.com has a lot of meetup groups, and you can kind of tailor that to short-term rentals.
One other thing, the link that I posted earlier, the www.centralohioria.com, that's Corey. That's the group that Alan was talking about. I'm actually a member. I haven't been since pre-pandemic. So I know that they just recently restarted in-person stuff, and I got to go get,
And for those of you that are in Central Ohio or in Ohio at all, they're having their big conference in Cincinnati first weekend in November, and there's still openings to attend that. So Mark and I are attending that. Our Happy House Hunters group, we have a real estate investors group, and so our whole group is attending.
Awesome. Well, I'll see you there because I'll be there.
Oh, I'll look for you then. And I think Andorra is going to be there too. That's how Alan and I met, is through Andorra. And I think she's planning on being there as well. So Adam, you'll have to come down and party with us a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we ran over just a little bit, but the conversation has been amazing. Alan, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate you doing this. It's been a lot of fun. I love that story. You know, don't sell my bedroom. I love that. It's a great story. And Adam, thank you as always for being my co-host. And
my pleasure.
For all of you that are listening, again, go to kathybenner.com and check out all of our replays. And we will see you again next month. Next month, we have Kelly Cronin is going to be our guest next month. And we get to hear her story on how she got started in short-term rentals. So stay tuned and just, you know, tap in with us every month. And I always have to go to my calendar to be sure that I say it correctly, but we are here the fourth Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock. And it's the same actual Zoom meeting ID. So if you've jotted that down somewhere, or if you have that, save that. That way you can just tap in. It's the same Zoom meeting ID every month, and it's the fourth Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern time. So thank you again, and we'll see everybody next month. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.